The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 2 Podcast.
Mentioned, we'll talk to Bruce Pearl later. Many expected Auburn to become the number one team in the country in the AP poll, but some reporting by a number of people has revealed that one reporter who had a vote has kept Auburn from being the number one team. Auburn had more first place votes than Gonzaga, but Jesse Newell, who covers college football for the Kansas City Star. He is the Kansas beat reporter. He voted Auburn number 9 in the poll, which cost Auburn getting the slot. John Wilner, who has been here a couple of times from the Mercury, was it the Mercury News or whatever the name of that paper is? He had Auburn 6 as well. Those two easily cost Auburn the slot, even if they had voted. They just missed number one by a handful of votes. If they had both had Auburn in the top 4 or 5, which the majority of the people did, Auburn would be the number one basketball team in the country, and a lot of Auburn fans are unhappy. Andre is up next. Good afternoon, Andre.
Coach, thanks for taking my call. As always, what another great interview you did with Sylvester Croom, Coach.
Thank you.
I always call, and especially on this day, because I always enjoy you playing that interview with the former Klansman from North Alabama. I think his name was Jay, Coach.
Yeah, and Jay I've from always Huntsville, wanted Alabama.
Yeah, I always wanted you to get him back on. I know he was a Vietnam veteran and everything. And, you know, Coach, I'm old enough to remember Vietnam. I'm from a small town called Vicksburg, Mississippi. Mm-hmm. I integrated school. Mississippi was the last state to integrate. I'm in the first program of Head Start kindergarten to come into Mississippi. It was 1970. Me and my older brother, my only brother, my sister, my oldest sister, we integrated schools there. My ancestors, especially my fraternal grandparents, come off the plantation, Ball Ground Plantation in Redwood, Mississippi. My father built his mother and father a home, and we moved them off the plantation. But me and my brother walked those cotton fields many days when we would go up there in the summertime. And, you know, with Jay, he shows you what we could become as a nation if we would always refer to our better persons, our better selves. Coach, do you know the greatest migration in the history of this country? Do you know where it occurred at?
I do not.
It's from the Mississippi Delta to the south side of Chicago.
Wow.
That's the greatest migration in the history of this country, where you couldn't vote yesterday, but once you hit Chicago, you could vote tomorrow. You can Google it. It'll come up. That is the greatest migration in the history of America, was from the Mississippi Delta. And all the bluesmen, all the great ones, the John Lee Hookers, the Muddy Waters, Sam Cooke, the Willie Dixon, they migrated from Mississippi all the way up north. Sometimes your car broke down to St. Louis, you stopped there. Otherwise, you kept on going to Chicago. They traveled what they call the Blue Highway 61 North to Chicago. But as always, Coach, I hope you play the interview with Jay. That is one of the most powerful interviews I've ever heard you do, and you've done a lot of great ones. But as always,
thank
Coach,
you,
thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, we are going to play it. It happened in 2008, and we'll play it in a couple of minutes. A lot of people have asked me, well, how come we've never had the guy back on? Not for a lack of trying. I have had, I dare say, 5 different Hollywood film producers call me since 2008 saying, can you get me in touch with this guy? I want to develop a screenplay. I've never been able to hear. We have never heard from him again. It's that simple. So there's nothing we can do about it. He was one and done. A lot of people have raised their eyebrows about the call. You can judge for yourself when we play it in a few minutes. Steve is up next in Birmingham. Hello, Steve.
How are you this afternoon?
Very well. How are you?
Good. I thought Jim from Tuscaloosa quit the show.
Oh, he's back. New year.
Way back. Well, is he a narcissist, and does he really believe that BS, or is that just his shtick?
You know, I think Jim really believes what he says.
Well, you know, I've always – Ted Williams, one of the greatest baseball players ever played, and, you know, if they had a dictionary of sports and sports people, you could – put baseball there, and his name would be to the side of it, too. I guess we need to add Jim from Tuscaloosa to that, too.
Well, you know, again, I mean, Jim was saying I accused him of saying he was better than Ted Williams. What he said today would indicate that at least he thought he could have been on the same level as Ted Williams. And what's interesting is that there are not very many people in the history of Major League Baseball. Most of them go back to the 1800s, who ever hit 400 in a season. This is not something that everyone does. And what Jim is doing is he's basically connotating that I am of his level had I not been hurt. And if that had been true, Jim would be in the Baseball Hall of Fame right now. Brad is up next. Good afternoon, Brad.
Hey, Paul, how you doing today?
Brad, we are doing great. Thank you.
Well, I see my buddy Legend is back on the show. That kind of gives me a warm and fuzzy feeling.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, so you and Legend had this tete-a-tete, what was it, last Tuesday? Is that right?
Tuesday.
Yeah.
We did. Yeah, we did. I called back after that when I was nervous that people were too much on him. Remember, I called and I said, y'all ease off of him. And I knew he was joking. It's a joke. And he said, although the apology he gave to you was pretty good, cause I think that was sincere, but he said something pretty good. He said, hey, I do this for fun. In other words, he was saying, this is not who I am. So, you know, and I agree with that. It's all in fun, and people that get take it too serious, and I've seen a lot of mean tweets and everything about him. You know, get a life, man. It's for jokes. But I do want to say, excuse me, I listened to those guys in Boston, and that was one of the funniest things I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah, I went back and listened to some of their, you know, the whole context of when they were talking about you, and we're talking about Toucher Toucher and Rich.
I can't think of their name either. Yeah.
I mean, they are very funny guys, and they certainly had fun with that phone call. I can tell you that.
They did. I know they were poking fun of me, but and it was hilarious. If you can't laugh at yourself, who can you laugh at? But I will say this, and this is from me and Legend to those dudes up in Boston, and that is just how y'all think it is down here, that everybody is cousin loving goat ropers. That's how it is. So don't come down here. Don't buy no houses. Don't come to visit. It's terrible. They got their cars up on blocks, and it's just as bad as you think. So stay up there in Boston and pay $10,000 a year to park your car.
I remember when I was young, I went up to Boston and was staying there for a couple of days, and the friend I was with had to move her car every Friday. It was a city ordinance that you could not leave your car. It was directly in front of where she lived, but she had to go move it.
It's way more insane than...
Yeah, you couldn't leave your... even though you've already paid for that parking spot.
And some... I remember watching a special, and this was 20 years ago. I think it was 60 Minutes, that people were having to pay... It wasn't $10,000. It was like... 30 or 40,000. Yeah. I'm sure it's 100,000 now for a parking spot to park their car. So, yeah, it's terrible down south. We're all inbred backwoods with no teeth. So, stay up there. Y'all take the high
road.
Stay
up there and enjoy your sub-zero temperatures, although we're having them here as well. Let's take a break. We are coming back with much, much more. We've already talked to Sylvester Croom, David Ubben joining us right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be.
We are back. Bruce Paul joining us later on. We've already had Sylvester Croom, David Ubben joining us now from The Athletic, writing about the transfer portal and NIL and will it ever end. David, great to have you on. So you quote a lot of people in the story, and there does seem to be some real concern about what is currently going on. Good afternoon and explain.
Yeah, I appreciate it, Paul. For the record, I think your ears are of normal size, quite fetchy. But this is something that people have been talking about, and I was down at the coaching convention last week, and it was something, I'm telling you, I'm not sure I had a single conversation with a coach that didn't include some talk for portal. And some coaches know, hey, this is the way of the world, and this is how it's going to go, but nobody likes it. And so the question is, sort of, is this just college football's new world where, you know, you want to call it free agency, which is true to some point, but it's a lot closer to a fantasy draft. And what I wrote about was basically, if you want to calm some of this down and have things make a little bit more sense, I mean, you got to pay the players and put them on a contract, because that's what stops the NBA and the NFL from being sort of, anarchy every year. I'm glad the players can move. They should have that freedom. But I'm not so sure, big picture, that this is great for the game. I suppose we'll see in time, but this is just an unbelievable amount of movement. I think we're at almost 1,200 scholarship football players in the transfer portal, and, you know, I think 30 or 40% of those, somewhere in there, have announced a home. We'll see what happens to the rest, and, you know, hopefully they all find homes, but math tells us that they won't, and so we'll see what happens, but ultimately, if you want to calm things down a little bit, you got to pay the guys and put them on actual contracts. And it's interesting. I had a coach who I don't think had read my column. I asked him, "What's your fix?" And that was his idea as well last week. So, just it's a new age in college football.
Well, David, I don't want to laugh because the idea of what we're talking about seemed foreign a couple of years ago. So, realistically, do you think we'll ever get to that point?
Well, it's interesting because I think, you know, I have sort of resigned myself to the fact that we would never see pay-for-play in college football, but there's so much momentum of people saying, I don't love this, but you can't put the toothpaste back in the bottle. And if there was ever anything that could push decision-makers, and coaches have the biggest sway, and right now, every coach managing his roster right now is a nightmare. And coaches are always, you know, for giving players all that they can, I guess. But when you can't go back to not allowing free transfers, and NIL has had a huge influence on this too, guys, you know, being promised and things and being poached, and there's a lot of tampering going on. The NCAA is sort of washing its hands of that whole situation. You know, they're taking complaints, but Paul, I think you and I know what they're going to do with those complaints. Going to put them in the comment box in Indianapolis, and they're going to sit there for about 20 years. But when coaches are motivated to say, hey, I don't love this, and the only fix is, hey, let's have some sort of a CBA, some sort of a contract, I mean, that sort of has to be the next step to making college football, again, a more fair and equitable enterprise, which it is compared to what it was a year ago. But it's also a lot more chaotic. And so the question is, can college football live with this? And I'm not sure we know the answer to that just yet.
David, you've already alluded to how bad it is, but I think we're all interested in your observations through your knowledge and reporting. I mean, what is it like in that portal right now, and what kind of shenanigans are going on?
I think the biggest complaint that I hear from coaches is not about guys that are in the portal, but guys that might go in the portal or aren't in the portal. You know, guys right now having to recruit their own rosters, making in-home visits to guys on their roster.
Wow.
Guys getting calls and saying, hey, you know, X school just called me and said, if I go there, you know, I'm going to get X amount of money in NIL money. What do you think about this? This kid's not in the portal. These things are happening. And I think that's where the coaches are very, very frustrated. Because if a kid goes in the portal, obviously, you know, he's free to talk to whoever he wants. And you know, you hope that a kid that goes in the portal is able to find a better situation and a better opportunity. A lot of guys are, but a lot of guys aren't. But the biggest thing that the coaches are complaining about right now that they don't love is the fact that guys that are not in the portal are fielding calls, and whether that's the high school coach or directly, you know, they don't love that. And there's, you know, in the NFL, if you do that, that's tampering. That's, you lose a draft pick, a gigantic fine. But in college football, that's just how it is right now. And you know, it's the Wild Wild West out there, and I don't know what you do. I'm willing to debate on whether or not that's good or bad for the sport of football. I think it's really interesting. It's made the offseason a lot more intriguing. But you know, when everybody's switching jerseys every year, it could be something that hurts, I think, casual fans. But we'll see. I think it's all really too soon to say what the ultimate impact is. But, you know, right now, again, every coach managing their roster in terms of recruiting incoming transfers, recruiting their current roster, and then dealing with the transfer portal, and then, oh, yeah, high school recruiting, which is already a beast on its own. Right now, it's just unsustainable. There's been some talk about maybe you move the portal window from, you know, the end of the season through maybe January, and then another opening at the end of the season. There's different things. I think that could be a possibility, but just a lot of irons in the fire, and it's, you know, it's just, like I said, it's just so chaotic and really the Wild Wild West out there.
David, within various teams' rosters, when a player says that to a coach, what are you hearing in relation to what these coaches can do and what are they willing to do?
Make your team better any way that you can. There's, I mean, it's a dog-eat-dog world, Paul. If you're not doing this, if you're not recruiting on somebody else's roster and somebody's calling up on your roster, you might not like it. But if you don't do it, somebody's going to do it to you, and you don't want to lose your guys. You don't want to have guys poach from your roster. And I think ultimately, you know, you want to win. You got to do everything you can to win because that's your livelihood. That's how you stay employed. And, you know, you can talk about, quote-unquote, doing it the right way, but Paul, there's not technically any rules, I don't think, right now, and especially not any that are going to be enforced that prevent this sort of tampering, this sort of poaching. It's happening, and it's going to keep happening unless something changes. And again, I think the question is college football as a whole, which that's not a thing. These are conferences that are sort of having to make all these decisions. The NCAA, at this point, I think we can all agree, is relatively useless. But the question is, can college football exist like this? Is this going to be the new normal? Or have they said, we got to get a handle on this and have some sort of order and some sort of rule to this? Because right now, there's none.
Finally, David, Friday was a big day with Jim Phillips talking about expansion. It seems like every day somebody else shoots this barrel to death. What do you think is going to happen when everyone quits issuing statements?
I mean, I think we're going to expand eventually, Paul. There's too much money to be made. And that's kind of what's the most confounding thing about this whole sort of playoff crawl, where it seemed like we were at hyper speed in the summer, and then you kind of heard stuff during the season like, I don't know, and then now, you know, you have Bob Bowlesby coming out of this meeting, you know, last week saying they weren't even close. Again, there's too much money to be made. We've seen how decisions are made in college sports, and people can dress it up however they want. But usually, if you're doing something, you know, follow the money. That's the oldest rule in journalism that'll tell you a whole lot. And so that's what's confusing about this in some ways. But again, you know, the ACC has their own priorities. They want to do 8. You know, certainly that would include some pressure for Notre Dame to join a league, even though I don't think that would be something that they're going to do ultimately. But Paul, they can do all this song and dance and all of this sort of jockeying and nudging and statement issuing until the cows come home. But it's going to be a 12-team playoff. The only question is when, and that doesn't have a clear answer at this point.
David Ubben, quite a bit to unpack there. David, many thanks. Great to have you with us. We will continue on what's already been a busy show. Sylvester Kroom, and you heard David there. Bruce Pearl later on. Stick around. We have a long way to go.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's Hims.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. Hims.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Welcome back. It was in January of 2008 when we received a call on this program. We were still back in Birmingham. That continues to resonate even today.
I got a little tale of my own. Paul, I grew up in Alabama and was raised as a racist.
Were you?
And I was very proud of it. My father was in the KKK. All my uncles were. But in 1967, I joined the Marine Corps. I considered myself strong, brave, and stupid, so I wanted to go to Vietnam, and I got my wish. First day there, as big a redneck as I was, I met probably the most militant acting and talking black person that was ever on the face of the earth. Less than an hour after we met, we tried to kill each other. And we tried to kill each other for the next couple of weeks, about every day, till our gunny sergeant took us aside and said, next time that happens, you're going home on a bad conduct discharge. So we put aside our differences and turned out to be fair soldiers. We still had strong animosity, but over the next 20 years, after the next 2 years, he saved my life a couple of times. I saved his a couple of times. And we didn't, neither one of us, want to leave Vietnam. We spent 22 of 24 months, between 67 and 69, there. Too much we were being treated in the Philippines. But in 69, we both had to had to leave. And I moved back to Alabama and went to school. He moved back to Detroit and resumed his ways. After I got out of college, as dumb as I was, I managed to get an engineering degree. And I talked to him a few times over those years. We had become, I guess you could call, friends. And he was not having it too good in Detroit, and I said, well, come on down here, and you can go to work for the same company I am. So he did, and he wound up working for me.
Wow.
And he decided he'd go to school and get his degree, which he did. And he decided he wanted to outdo me, which he always did. He went on and got his master's degree, and I wound up working for him. And 32 years ago, come April 3rd of this year, Paul, I will have been married to his sister for 32 years.
Wow.
We both had...
so now you're working for her.
Yeah. He's the best man at my wedding.
That's incredible. That's an incredible story.
We had two sons apiece. All four of them graduated from the University of Alabama. And
anybody ever tell you this would be a good book?
Yeah, probably would be. Nobody believe it.
this would be a great book and movie.
But we've had a good life, and he lives about three houses down now, and we still try to lie as much as we can about our war exploits. But that just goes to prove, Paul, that anything can happen to a former racist. You never know.
That really is an incredible story. Just an extraordinary piece of history there.
Well, he turned out to be a lot better than I thought he was at first, and I hope I did too.
So that was that. What's interesting about that story, that happened Martin Luther King Day in 2008, and we have played it most every year since then. People continue to ask about it. And we really, as I mentioned previously, we have never talked to that gentleman again. I don't know what happened to him. He called once and chose never to call back again to talk about what he shared that January day. Let's get back to the calls at 855-242-7285. Jim is in North Carolina. Hello, Jim.
Hey, Paul, that's a hard act to follow.
Well, I appreciate you calling, though. Thank you for being here.
Yeah. Listen, listening to Greg Sankey about the playoff expansion was very interesting. He's very measured and very smart guy. It's obvious why he's okay with four, and I understand why he doesn't care about 12. It doesn't matter, because that could be three or four SEC teams, which petrifies some other conferences. And the reason I think he's opposed to eight is that's a backdoor way of limiting SEC participation, because I understand that would include a six guaranteed conference champions.
Right.
Yeah. So I can understand that, but I can see why a couple of conferences would just be petrified of 12, because I can foresee three or four SEC teams in that scenario.
Yeah, easily. I think Sankey's big argument is why, under his plan, which was devised with three other people, including the commissioner of the Big 12, would rank the top, the conference champions who I think are the highest ranked versus, he's opposed to automatic qualifiers. And I think there is a reason for that. The SEC champs going to the playoffs. That's a given. And this year we saw the number two team. What if you get a Pac-12 winner that's 9-3? Easily could happen. Very easily could happen. This year, I think the winner of the Pac-12 had three losses. So, is that person worthy? Having gone through the Pac-12, you may get it in the ACC this year. The ACC champion. What was that? Wake Forest? They lost a couple of games. I mean, they were a good team, but certainly were they elite worthy? Debatable. Hey, thank you for the call. Steve is up next in Birmingham. Hello, Steve.
Yeah, Paul. I wanted to say two other things I called earlier. It's two other things. You were saying that if he had played, he might have been as good as Ted Williams. Well, if I was 6'2", 240, and ran a 4.200, I might have been as good as Bo Jackson.
Well, yeah. I mean, there are a lot of really talented people out there, but this is somebody many, many years later who is going back to his youth and saying, had I not been hurt, I could have been. And my comments today were no different than when the original call that he claims I misconstrued when we went down a long list of people. I asked him about golf. He said he was in the same world as some of the greatest golfers and some of the greatest some of the greatest that. That's easy to say, but very difficult to back up.
He's the same guy a few years ago that said he had just come in and played 18 holes of golf and shot in the low 70s at a course that had been closed for almost a decade.
Right.
What credence do you put in someone, Steve?
Just because the course is closed doesn't mean you can't go out there and set the new course record. I used to play golf a lot back in the day, and I would play with guys who, they literally thought, they would say, when I turn 50, I'm going to the senior tour, and I'm thinking to myself, the way most people play golf. I never played serious golf. I remember when I played with these guys, and I don't know if you play golf or not, but their idea of shooting a 78 is, okay, I hit three balls in the water on the ninth hole. I played with a guy once, and I hit a ball in the water. I ended up like with a six or seven on the hole. He hit three in the water and had a six. And I'm like going, how did he have a six? And I finally knew I was like looking at the scorecard. Not that we were just playing friendly golf. And he goes, well, my handicap stipulates I can only put a six on the hole. I'm like, oh, okay. So these are the same guys, though, who, I'll give you a six-footer because, my team's already won the hole. They are the same ones who thought they could go out there and play professional golf. And, Steve, I've covered professional golf, and I've never seen in the final round of the Masters Tiger saying to Phil, you're good. I birdied the hole. You're 8 feet away for a par. Just go ahead and pick it up. That's just not the way it works. But that's how a lot of people that play golf, and I guess in Jim's case, because he never quite – the only thing I want to know from Jim, and I'll keep quiet here, is what is the absolute best he has ever played at every position, and where did he play it, and is there any evidence or proof of that? That's all we're asking, because even if he played high school ball, there has to be some record books, don't there? I mean, most people that play high school – I covered high school football and basketball. Guys are keeping score. The batting averages, the scoring averages, the rushing per game. But anyway, that's all I'm saying. We'll take a break. Much more to come.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
All of you back here on this Monday. Lee Ann is up next. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. How are you?
We are doing great. Thank you.
Great. I just wanted to call in. I'm a first-time caller. I listen to you every day on my way home from work.
Thank you.
I'm a kindergarten teacher.
Oh, man.
And I'm kind of an over-competitive, crazy Georgia fan. And I took my sons, they are 22 and 26 years old, I took them to the ball game last week. That was a week ago, right? About a week ago? It's been a crazy week. A week ago today, we went to the ball game. And we listened to your show. We listened to Elle Duncan. And I just have to tell you, Elle Duncan is my new hero. I think she's awesome.
Well, let me say this about her, Lee. For about 3 years, I would go up to Connecticut every Sunday morning and be on the set with her on ESPN Sports Center. And if you think she is funny in that segment, you should be with her off the air. And
oh, I bet.
I would have to, I'm just a novice at this business. I would have to occasionally tell her, I said, "Elle, those we're about to come back live in front of a million people. And if you don't, the thing she was saying would make your hair stand up. She's that funny, that off the cuff, with no filter, doesn't care what anybody thinks. And her segment last Tuesday was really remarkable. I agree with you. I don't know where she's going
really
in her
was.
Career, but it's up.
It really was. We were we spent the night on Monday night, and I drove home on Tuesday.
Oh.
But I, too, had not had any sleep. And I'm still hoarse from going to that ball game and then going to a Reba McEntire concert this past Friday.
Oh, man.
So that's why I sound like I do. But she was great that day. She made me laugh, and she gave me permission to bark if I want to bark. So I did that at the Reba McEntire concert the other night when people were yelling Roll Tide in the middle of a
song. Where did Reba play?
In Huntsville.
Oh, okay.
Alabama. I live in Alabama. I'm a Georgia fan.
She's funny.
Yeah. I'm a Georgia fan, but I live in Alabama, and it's a long story. But so
okay.
We've had to put up with a lot over the years. In fact, my husband is sitting right beside me. I have you on speakerphone. He's an Alabama fan, and I wouldn't even let him go to the ball game with us.
That was smart.
Because I figured they have, you know, he's seen it. He's been there, done that. They have all the championships they need, and we just wanted one, okay? It's just been so
Leanne,
long.
You
we
know
just
this because you're married to an Alabama fan, but that game was just another Monday night for Alabama people. I mean, they couldn't.
Exactly.
They can't differentiate one championship from the next. They've won so many.
Exactly. And I went to the SEC championship game. And, Paul, I'm going to tell you, I had to leave early.
Oh, I don't blame
because
you.
I had a – I'm not a sore loser. I don't – you know, I'm not going to pout and all that because Alabama played better than we did that day. They deserved to win. We did not show up. But I had a jerk sitting in front of me taunting my kids, even though my kids are adults. They were taunting them and basically called my son a racist. And – I had had enough.
Leanne, the Alabama fan called your son a racist?
Okay, well, let me show you how it went down. My son, he said, I can't remember who it was. Maybe Conkin called a pass. I can't remember the situation. It could have been Bauer. I don't know who it was. Anyway, my son said, oh, that's one bad white boy.
Oh.
And he did not mean anything. But he was talking to me. He did not mean anything by that. And it just got ugly after that. I won't tell you all the details. I'll spare you, but it just was ugly. And it just really bothered me because that man does not know me. I'm a kindergarten teacher. And I mean, I'm not racist. We're not racist. We're not racist people. And my son has, you know, friends of all ethnicities and races. And it just, I don't know. It bothered me. And I was upset with myself because I had to leave. I was like, I have to leave or I'm going to get in trouble here at this ball game. I mean, I wasn't going to hurt the man, but I might spit on him like a five-year-old because that's what five-year-olds do and that's who I teach. But anyway.
Well, of all the things you've said, the thing I am most impressed with is that you teach kindergarten. I cannot imagine the equilibrium and the patience it must take to teach young kids like that.
Well, I'm going to be honest, it's a lot. And in fact, this is my 28th year, and 27 of them have been in kindergarten.
Oh, man.
And this is my last year. I'm retiring at the end of this year. So,
Leanne, if I taught kindergarten, I would keep a flask in my desk. I don't think I could do it.
Well, there probably are some people that do, but yeah. I don't. I promise.
And I say that because I feel like I teach the next class before kindergarten, and that's the class that we teach here every day.
Exactly. I'm telling you, you've got
And I do have a flask in the desk that Randy replenishes during every commercial break. Hey, Leanne, thanks so much.
You
take care of yourself. Really great to talk to you. People only knew. What are they going to do, like an SEC insight on the behind the scenes of this show and say what really happens while you're talking? Appreciate it, Leanne. We are heading to a break. We've already had Sylvester Croom on. The head coach of the Auburn Tigers, Bruce Pearl, joins us later. Matt Hayes as well.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.